The date is July 31st, 1987, and we're watching The Lost Boys. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
And welcome to our first spooky Halloween episode of I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. I am your host, Sean Wells, and with me is my co-host...
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And today, because we have a special Halloween episode, we decided to bring in a guest. So we are joined by our special guest, Maren Richardson. Hello, Maren.
Welcome. Hi, thank you guys so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. So you are what we like to think of as a youngin.
Yes.
I know you are only recently 18, so this movie is definitely from a time that you didn't even exist on this planet.
Yeah, that's right.
What is your experience with The Lost Boys?
Oh, well, I am a big fan, actually, of 80s movies. So I was going into it expecting, you know, the 80s overall theme. And I was quite surprised, actually. Lost Boys was really interesting. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so like you said, the 80s, this week we're looking back at July 1987, when the movies and theaters were Jaws the Revenge, RoboCop, Summer School, La Bamba, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, and of course, our movie for today, The Lost Boys, which earned $32.2 million on an $8.5 million budget.
And this movie is 33 years old now, so there will be spoilers ahead. So, as always, if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, press pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, "Sleep all day, party all night, never grow old, never die, it's fun to be a vampire."
So that doesn't say 80s, I don't know what does.
Yeah, and each one of those, there is a period. That's a whole bunch of little sentences. It is sleep all day, period, party all night. So they definitely had fun with this tagline. I find it interesting that they would throw the big reveal of the fact that it's a vampire movie right there in the tagline, because when you're watching the movie, it seems like the fact that they're vampires is supposed to be a shock partway through the movie. But this may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin quickly here for our 60-second synopsis.
Okay. Michael and Sam Emerson move with their recently divorced mother to the small beach town of Santa Carla, California, to live with their crazy grandfather. Soon after their arrival, Michael falls for a girl named Star and gets sucked into a group of what he doesn't yet realize are vampires, who are led by a guy named David. Meanwhile, Sam befriends a pair of brothers, the Frog Brothers, at a comic book store who subtly try to convince him that the town is infested with bloodsuckers by passing him comic books. When Michael accidentally finds himself turned into a vampire, it's up to Sam and his new vampire hunter friends to help Michael save himself and Star by killing the head vampire so that they can return to a human life.
Yep, that's it right there. I know for me, this is one of those movies that I remember when I was a kid that was kind of a stepping stone into horror. We're going to be talking about one next week as well, which was also the same way. But this is kind of that teen movie of, mm-hmm. you know, it's not quite super scary like a Nightmare on Elm Street would have been back in the day. So when I invited you, Maren, one of the things you had even said was, "Oh, The Lost Boys. I think I've heard of that." So, well, like, were you really that clueless about The Lost Boys, or,
well,
you know, like, you haven't seen it before, but...
I have heard of it. I mean, it's definitely in the horror, I guess, quotation, you know. Yeah. But I know many of the actors. So, I mean, I've watched, I feel like I've never seen it, but like, I think I've seen like clips of it before, but never the full thing. So when you said it, I was like, wait a second. I think my parents have talked about this before. someone has mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Colin? Yeah, The Lost Boys. What kind of experience do you have with it?
I'd never seen it either. This was a movie that my mom did own. I remember we had it on VHS, but she wouldn't let me watch it. I think maybe she thought it was too scary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, having watched it now, but maybe I was young and impressionable in my youth. But yeah, so I'd never seen it, and I thought it was good.
So now, you being much younger than we are, Maren, are you a vampire fan at all? Are you someone that went through a Twilight phase?
Oh, or anything, yeah, like that? Or... sadly to say, I did, yes.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I could also go with like True Blood or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Those are things that I've never really been into, is Twilight or True Blood, but
I think that's essential as part of my, I mean, as other generations as well, but for us, I totally remember like going over when I was like 14, going over to a friend's sleepover, and yeah. Are you an Edward fan or Jacob fan? Like,
and which were you, Team Edward or Team Jacob?
I don't really know.
Jacob all the way.
I would say Jacob. Yeah.
Can't tolerate more sparkly vampires.
Oh my goodness! I do love the vampires though.
Well, okay. Let's jump into The Lost Boys. It's directed by Joel Schumacher, who actually only died a few months ago on June 22nd. I looked it up, not COVID-related. He's the director of St. Elmo's Fire, 8mm, Phantom of the Opera, Falling Down, and of course, the best Batman movies in the franchise, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
I call those the horny Batman
movies. The horny Batman.
Oh my goodness, the 1995 or something like that.
Yeah, they're neon and full of nipples, so yeah. they're the horny Batmans. It's produced by Richard Donner, who we talked about as a director in The Goonies, which is very fitting, because this is a very Goonies-esque movie, I would say. But we haven't really talked about him as a producer. He's known for X-Men, Any Given Sunday, Free Willy, Delirious, all the Lethal Weapons. It's written by Janice Fisher, who has 7 total credits, 3 of which are Lost Boys related. 2 of those credits are for the sequels, and all they get is the based on characters by. And she wrote an episode of The Golden Girls, too. It's also written by James Jeremias, who has 3 credits. All of them are Lost Boys. 2 of those are those based on credits. And also Jeffrey Boehm, who is a writer from Lethal Weapon 1, 2, and 3, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Innerspace, Funny Farm. He's definitely where you get all the writing cred in this movie. And we open on the credits, and we're flying over water, and we get our first listen to the song Cry Little Sister, the Lost Boys theme by Gerard McMahon, a song we're going to hear multiple times over the next 97 minutes. that was, they didn't lie when they said that's the Lost Boys theme.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the water's edge and eventually reveals a carnival on the boardwalk, and we get to see the carousel on the boardwalk, and we meet the main gang of hoodlums featuring Marco, who is played by Alex Winter, who goes by Alexander Winter in this movie. And we discussed back in episode 3 in what is probably the main role he's known for, Bill in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And lately, he's more of a director. We meet Paul, who is played by Brooke McCarter, who is someone that has 10 credits. And Dwayne, played by Billy Worth, who is someone with 57 credits. Boys on the Side, a lot of TV. A movie called Who Killed the Baby Jesus, featuring him and actress Tuesday Knight. Knight with a K. But that seems more like the kind of name an actress would give herself if she was like going into porn or something.
I was
going
to say that seems like a name of an actress who's more of a lady of the night.
Yes. But all of these guys have terrible 80s rock star hair, especially Alex Winter. I mean, I would say he's got the worst hairdo of all of them, because he's got the curly blonde fro on top, but he's got the long curls that just hang down in the back. That's a terrible mullet.
They missed an opportunity in this movie by not having these guys form a band at some point.
They are led around the carousel by our bleach blonde mulleted David, who is played by Kiefer Sutherland, who is pretty much one of the biggest stars out of this movie. He was in Stand By Me, Young Guns, Flatliners, The Cowboy Way. Of course, he was Jack Bauer in 24. And he is the general in Monsters vs. Aliens. Also, Canadian connection. He's son of actors Donald Sutherland and Shirley Douglas. And the grandson of Canadian politician Tommy Douglas, who we all know as the father of universal health care in Canada.
Marin, are you a Kiefer Sutherland fan?
I don't really know. Like, yes and no. I've seen some of his movies, but not all of his, like, what he's famous for.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say that another Canadian connection I found with the role of David was before Kiefer Sutherland was cast, they were actually considering Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, I read that too.
Yeah, which
I can't even imagine, especially at that time he would have been, I feel like, so deeply deep in the comedy sphere.
Not even yet, though. I think he was in Earth Girls Are Easy before this, but he wasn't on Mad TV yet. Like, Mad TV was still several years away.
Hey everybody, Editing Sean here. I just wanted to apologize because I'm not sure what past Sean was thinking. Jim Carrey never appeared in Mad TV. He was one of the regular cast members of In Living Color. If you're currently sending a tweet or an email, you can go ahead and delete that, because I'm already aware of my mistake. Anyway, back to the show.
This gang is causing problems with some of the other people on the carousel until they get thrown off the boardwalk by the security guard. We then cut to the end of the night. The boardwalk is now deserted. The guard is walking to his car before being chased by some unseen thing from above. The guard runs to his car and can't quite seem to operate a door handle. I tried to pause it in this moment. It looks like one of those door handles where you have to push the button to open, and he's rattling it like he's trying to open it. If this is his car, he should know how to open the door handle. Like, I don't know. They could have used this scene in when they first introduced keyless entry into cars. They could have used this scene as a great advertisement for the benefits of keyless entry. He screams and is seemingly attacked by something that we never get to see. And then we cut to daytime and we are watching an SUV, probably at a time before they were actually called SUVs, driving along a coastal road, pulling a trailer. The family inside is moving to Santa Carla. We've got the mom, Lucy, who is played by Diane Wiest, from Birdcage, Hannah and Her Sisters, Bullets Over Broadway, Footloose, Parenthood. I loved her in a show called Life in Pieces, which unfortunately was canceled. We've got older brother Michael, played by Jason Patrick, who was in Sleepers, Speed 2 Cruise Control, The Losers, Narc. I always thought he was a bigger star. Like, when I started going through his IMDb, I always thought Jason Patrick was this huge star, and it's like, oh no, Speed 2 is pretty much his biggest role.
I had no idea who he was. I had to look him up because I thought that he was the T-1000, but then I remembered that was Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick, yes. And you were wondering why he didn't have the ears of Robert Patrick. Yeah. And we also meet younger brother Sam, who is played by Corey Haim, who was in Lucas, License to Drive. He reprised the role of Sam in Lost Boys, The Tribe. He was in Crank High Voltage, and here's one credit that he is probably very proud of. He was an uncredited biker gang member in Batman and Robin. He's the kind of actor, he's played himself three times in his career. Like, you know that when actors are brought into movies to play themselves, that's usually a death sentence. That shows you what what kind of career they ended up having. Except for some reason, it worked with Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris revived his career when he was in Harold and Kumar, go to White Castle. But yeah, other people, when they play themselves, that's usually the dead end of their career. But I always thought he died much younger. I was surprised that he died in 2010. I thought he was like River Phoenix. I thought he was one of these guys that died when he was young. So when I look at his later career, it's like, oh, Corey Haim. What happened?
Drugs.
Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
So they're chatting about their move. On the back of the welcome sign for Santa Carla, we see Murder Capital of the World spray painted. And we cue the People Are Strange song, which I actually thought this was the Doors version. And then I noticed that, nope, it's actually a cover version, but it sounds so much like the original. And we get a heavy dose of 80s montage showing us how weird everyone in town is in little 2-second clips, and sights of the town and missing posters on the poles. And Michael is asking some guy if there is any work around, and there's nothing legal. They get to their grandpa's house, where they will be living, and we see Grandpa, who is played by Bernard Hughes, who was in Tron, Doc Hollywood. He played Grandpa Buzz on the show Blossom for 55 episodes. He was a big soap star in the 60s. He was on Guiding Light, The Secret Storm, and As the World Turns, all between 1961 and 1970. And Grandpa is playing dead on the porch.
I was so confused on that. And I was like, wait a second, what?
Like, this is just a thing he does? Is he... And Mom says that he's a heavy sleeper, but this is his big prank for his grandsons, is playing dead?
I found the grandpa just so bizarre that I kind of, anytime he was around, just tuned him out.
But he was one of the best characters. He was hilarious, though.
I didn't understand his goal with, like, bringing new pieces of taxidermy every night to Sam's
bedroom. Sam's bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're at Grandpa's house. Everyone starts unpacking the boxes. The brothers come across Grandpa's taxidermy death room. And Grandpa lays down his rules. So the first stop on his tour, the second shelf in the fridge, which he has covered with a cardboard flap that says Old Fart, because that's where he keeps his root beer and his double stuffed Oreos. And that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. Another huge one for product placement this week, the Lost Boys, is brought to you by Heyer's Root Beer, Oreos, Nature Valley Peanut Butter Boppers, Frigidaire, Crispy Crackers, SOS Pads, Windex, Carnation Milk, Miller Lite, Hobie Surfboards, U-Haul, American Express, Sharp Stereos, RCA, and Ford. Most notably, Grandpa's 1957 Ford Fairlane 500 Skyliner. Plus a few extra honorable mentions. The Vampire Lair has a Munsters poster. And the video store has a few prominently displayed Warner Brothers things, like the posters for the movies Once Bitten and European Vacation. Or the video copies of Gremlins and Goonies that can be seen on the shelf. Both movies that have Corey Feldman in them.
Yep.
So, just like in Demolition Man, we have video copies of a movie featuring one of the stars of the movie. And, of course, the comic book store has a very heavy emphasis on the DC comics in the store, namely Superman and Batman titles. But we also see Spider-Man and Fantastic Four comics at one point. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
One thing I was really kind of confused by was the fact that in Sam and Michael's room, they have this poster of Rob Lowe in a really, like, sexy pose.
Yeah.
And I was just unsure why teenage boys would have a Rob Lowe poster up.
I wondered that as well. I did discover that it was something that Richard Donner put in there.
Okay.
Or no, sorry, not Richard Donner. It was something that the director, Joel Schumacher, put in. because he had directed St. Elmo's Fire that had Rob Lowe in it. But yes, a very bizarre, you would expect something like a Bo Derek poster for kids in the 80s or something.
Knowing that
like
it was
that.
A Schumacher idea doesn't describe, like, there's a reason, like Sean said, why I call the Batman movies the horny Batman movies. It's because they're like so over the top, like sexual tension and all this, and Schumacher, that's like a hallmark of all his movies. Even this movie. This movie was originally conceived to actually follow the Peter Pan storyline a little bit.
Yeah.
But he didn't think it was sexy enough, so he changed it to this.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like 5th and 6th graders. It was supposed to be very much more Goonies. Yeah, and he wanted it to be sexier. And vampires are sexier when they're teenagers, I guess, instead of preteens, maybe. So Grandpa concludes his tour talking about how the town is, in fact, the murder capital of the world, and then about his delivered TV guide magazines, and how sometimes the label will be wrinkled, and you'll be tempted to tear it off, but don't, because it just ruins the cover. So the boys ask where the TV is, and are told that if you read the TV guide, you don't need a TV. Maybe I should have mentioned TV guide in Sponsorship Corner as well.
Marin, did your parents ever have the TV guide? I feel like this is a... TV guide was probably something that ended in, like, the year 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never had, like, a paper copy of the movie guide, but I still had... I would still look at the guide on the TV and record which episode, TV shows I wanted. Yeah, still do it now.
That's not the same as having an actual
TV guide. TV guide as a magazine was, like, a huge thing for a long time. Like, people collected it, and there was, like, commemorative... issues and stuff and all this.
Yeah, and there'd be issues that had like different covers.
Yeah.
So that you'd have to collect both if you wanted both covers.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, it was a thing.
Collection, yes.
And if you are a subscriber to TV Guide, you don't need a TV, apparently. There is later that night a beach party concert at the boardwalk and a very cheesy, shirtless, sweaty rock star playing and plenty of sexy 80s saxophone going on. Michael and Sam are in the crowd, and Michael spots a lovely gal in the crowd that they're coyly playing a little eye footsie with each other. She takes off. Michael decides to follow.
This scene is very misleading. It's Michael and Star, their little thing there, would lead any man to believe that if you just stare at a woman hard enough, that will create like a bond, some sort of a... But in reality... she was probably just running away.
True, yeah.
So we see Mom Lucy on the boardwalk. We see some more missing people signs, including one now for the security guard from the opening scene. She comes to a video store on the boardwalk that has a help wanted sign up. Inside, we meet the owner, Max, who is played by Edward Herman. Kind of like Alex Winter going by Alexander Winter in this movie. Edward Herman goes by Ed Herman in this movie. So this is another one where someone has decided to go by a different name, different moniker. He has 135 credits, including Annie, Overboard, and probably Gilmore Girls is what he's most famous for. I have to admit, I have seen every episode of Gilmore Girls. I love the Gilmore Girls. And... I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Well, the podcast is over, guys.
That's what we'll do for a spin-off podcast. We'll make Colin watch the Gilmore Girls.
Oh my
god. I'm good.
So Ed Herman or Max watches as the gang does a lap through the store before getting reminded by Max that they aren't welcome here. Lucy asks for her job. And he never actually says yes, but we have to assume later on that she did in fact get it because she is working there. The brothers decide to split up so that Michael can go find the girl, and Sam goes to explore the boardwalk where he eventually finds the comic book store. Here he meets the Frog Brothers, Edgar, played by Corey Feldman. And this is now the first official time that the two Coreys are on screen together. We talked about him in our Goonies episode. He's in movies like Stand By Me, The Burbs, Gremlins, reprises his role in the Lost Boys sequels. And of course, you know, later in life, he was on The Surreal Life, which shows you where his career ended up.
He's also currently filming a movie in Edmonton with Bret Hart. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw that. Yeah, they're looking for actresses to be.
Yeah, they're looking for actresses, Marion. So
Might check it out.
We also meet Alan Frog, who is Jameson Newlander. He was in The Blob. Lost Boys, The Tribe, where he gets one of those parentheses scene deleted credits. And he was in Lost Boys, The Thirst. Those ones, I guess, weren't deleted. His IMDb profile has 20 pictures on his profile, and 19 of them are Lost Boys related. The only other pick is from a movie. It's one of those like unauthorized biography movies called The Tale of Two Corys, where he plays a cop pulling over Corey Feldman. That's the only other picture in his IMDb profile.
I have to say, like, we talked about a little in the Goonies one, but I'm not a big fan of Corey Feldman, even as, like, a person. And I'm kind of, like, shocked that he ended up being... He seems to have become the bigger of the two. Even watching this movie, I would have thought Corey Haim had way more potential as an actor.
Yeah, you would have thought that Corey Feldman would be the junkie.
Yeah.
Yeah. From seeing him in Goonies and knowing, like, a bunch of the other movies that I've seen him in, like The Burbs... He's often playing the outcast guy that's got the upper hand on everyone. He knows all the inside information or whatever. Like, yeah, that just seems to be the character that Corey Feldman plays in a lot of these movies.
Mm-hmm. But very typecasted.
Yeah. They are running the comic store while their stoner parents sit in the corner. And, of course, they are dressed much differently than Sam, which shows that Sam is new here, because Sam has that cream-colored trench coat that looks like it's made out of a suit jacket, though.
Yeah, Sam has, like, the Los Angeles city boy look, I'm assuming, of that time.
He's from Arizona. But yeah, and the flowing neon colored Hawaiian-ish shirt, whereas the other guys are wearing their fingerless leather gloves and their Rambo style headbands and like army jackets. But after a subtle brag from Sam about the possibly owning a rare Batman comic and criticizing the layout of the Supermans in the store, they recommend a comic to him called Vampires Everywhere. Apparently, this comic you can actually find at that comic store on display. Like, this comic store exists in Santa Cruz, California, which also ironically for a while was known as the murder capital of the world because there were three serial killers that had done their work in and around that town. But this comic book store actually still exists, and he keeps a prop copy of this on display there. But Sam doesn't really like horror comics, he says, but Edgar tells him that this comic could save your life. This suspenseful moment is broken up by some people just outside the front of the store, snatching some comics and running away. And it's the guy that David was having to tussle with on the carousel in the opening. Michael has found the girl, and she's with David on the back of his motorcycle. So, like Colin said, maybe she was just running away because of the creepy eye contact he was making at the concert. We now cut back to the back seat of a car where the guy who snatched the comics, his character's name is Greg, is aggressively trying to make out with his best gal, Shelley. While she sits and reads one of the stolen Sad Sack comics, she's so into the comic, but she's not at all into Greg. Greg just wants to get some, which, of course, is a classic horror trope. You gotta throw in the couple in the back seat, and one of them is pushing them away, so at least it's justified in a second when he dies. But these two, by the way, are played by Alan Bacon Chapman and Nori Morgan, who have a combined 5 credits between them. I just thought that was worth noting, that these two actors that were actually given names, these two characters that were given the names of Greg and Shelley, yeah, they have 5 credits between them, and of course, 2 of those credits are this movie. But they end up getting the roof ripped off their fucking car, screaming, getting pulled out into the air, all still by some unseen force. Then we get another scene, the next day, maybe? There was a weird passage of time in this movie. Like, it feels like in some cases this movie took place over a weekend. There's some cases where it feels like it's at least a week. Yeah. But some of the relationships progress so fast that you feel like it takes place over a month. I don't know. The time is a little wonky. So Edgar Frog is asking Sam if he's seen anything strange about the town yet. When Sam says no, Edgar gives him a new comic called Destroy All Vampires. And this one has their phone number on the back. And he should pray that he never has to use that phone number. I do like the reaction from Corey Haim where he's like, yeah, I hope I don't have to use it too. Like, he's just, this is another situation where one person is creeped out by a couple other people, I guess. Now it's nighttime again because we're on the boardwalk and the girl that Michael had been chasing after finds him at the ear piercing place, but offers to pierce his ear for him. She introduces herself as Star. And Star is played by Jamie Gertz, who was in 16 Candles, Twister, a sitcom I used to love called Still Standing. And Michael responds with, oh, your parents too? Ex-hippies? And I was this close to being named Moonbeam or Moonchild or some shit. Boom! Moonchild makes a return. We talked about Moonchild in Neverending Story. Because in Neverending Story, I couldn't believe that this was the kid's mom's name.
It seems like hippies were really a thing in the 80s.
Yeah, referring to old hippies. But I love that Moonchild has made an appearance as a legitimate name in at least two movies now that we've watched. So that makes me feel a bit better about Bastion screaming that out in Neverending Story. But they're walking and talking when David and the gang finds them. He tells Star to come to him. And he tells Michael to try to keep up on his bike as they head to the sand bluffs. And so they're racing along in heavy fog? Or is it smoke? It just, they just have this like foggy black area where they're racing along on their bikes. And they're playing chicken towards the cliff. And Michael wipes out. And he gets mad and punches David, and David says, how far are you willing to go, Michael? And takes him to their hideout, because I guess he has proved that he deserves to be hanging out with them instead of just murdered by them.
And there's that whole thing, too, where Michael's kind of like, just you! Just you! I thought they were actually going to fight.
Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed they didn't.
It was a bit of a letdown. So, yeah, he takes him to their hideout, which was once the nicest resort in Santa Carla, but it was built on a fault line, and so it fell into a chasm, I guess. They feed him rice maggots, and they feed him noodle worms. Oh, yeah. This was something that was actually kind of disturbing to watch, was when his rice turns into maggots before his eyes. But is this a skill of vampires that I don't know about, that they can actually change your perception?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know that either, and I was like, wait a second.
I mean, it's not like a... I think it's one of those ones that's more like, I guess, subjective, depending on who's made. But I've seen it with other, like vampires. Lots of vampires have that... What do you want, like, persuasion ability, like that mental persuasion ability? So I think that would fall in line with that, kind of.
Okay. Yeah, see, I guess that's something about vampire lore that I was not aware of.
They actually, there's a TV show based on a movie called What We Do in the Shadows with Taika Waititi.
Okay, yeah.
And they actually do the same scene with the vampires in that show as well.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, and they also share a bottle of blood with him. He's initiated into the gang, and we get our second use of Cry Little Sister.
Mm-hmm.
They take him out to a train bridge where they all jump off the bridge, but Michael, he's not brave enough to just jump. He crawls down. But they hang off the side while a train goes by on the bridge, and one by one they all let go and drop into the fog. And Michael just can't hold on any longer, and he falls, and then is just sort of in the fog, freaking out, but not really falling, but maybe he's falling, and then he ends up waking up in his own bed. This is where I get a little confused about how much time is actually passing, because Michael is woken up by Sam because his mom is on the phone, and mom says something about, I don't know what's gotten into you lately, you sleep all day, come in late. But as far as I can tell, this is the first time that he's come in late, So that's why I'm wondering whether the fog to him on bed was like a time jump of like a week or something.
Yeah, it seems like some time has passed. I also was thinking, because this is the point where Michael is meant to have, at some point between the fog and now, he's meant to have been converted.
Yeah.
Assumingly before the fog, because if he survived the fall, he has vampire powers then.
It's because he drank the blood. It's the whole, you know, just like Interview with a Vampire, drink from me and live forever, right?
But I thought he had to be, I thought there was something to the bite.
Yeah, I thought that you had to be bitten as well.
I thought you had to be bitten to become a vampire, and as far as I'm aware, he never actually gets bit.
Yeah, well, see, well, that's the thing, yeah. So he drank the blood.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to watch Interview with a Vampire, because they seem to set out the rules of vampiring little bit more.
I'll go on Buffy rules. In Buffy the Vampire Slayer world rules, you have to get bit, then you have to drink your sire's vampire's blood, then you have to die, and then when you wake up, you'll be a vampire.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Buffy's pretty good
source
to go by. Yeah.
What's the Twilight version of? Do you remember?
Oh my goodness. Let me think back. It was bites, but they lived off animal blood though.
Yeah.
They didn't want to like bite humans and things like that. But yeah, I know that they would bite. So when they did that in the movie, I was like, wait a second, what? And then I was like, oh, okay, that's a little.
Yeah, it just gets a little obscure as to the time that's passing and the rules.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Mom is on the phone with him, and she wants Michael to babysit Sam tonight, even though Sam seems old enough to babysit himself. Like, how old is Corey Haim in this movie? He's got to be at least 14. I can't imagine.
He died at 38 in 2010.
Yeah.
Fast math, 2010 was 10 years ago. So,
so yeah, 1972.
The movie's 33 years old.
He would have been 13, 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seemed kind of old to be babysitting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was starting to babysit other kids at like 12 years old.
Well, exactly. And I mean, this is the 80s when people were even more relaxed with their children being left with strangers.
Yeah, movie 80s movies would have me believe that at that age, kids were just hitchhiking across the country without any issues.
Dan might be reference, yes.
Yeah, Mom asks him to babysit Sam tonight so that she can go out on a date with her boss, Max. So I guess that's pre-Me Too. Grandpa uses Windex's aftershave to go deliver something. Presumably a stuffed animal, but clearly much more of a euphemism to Mrs. Johnson. I also love that at this point, Michael has an earring. And earringed Sam tells Michael he looks ridiculous with an earring.
To be fair, Michael's earring is this like three-loop thing hanging off his ear.
Dangly thing. But doesn't it have a cross at the end? Like, am I not seeing a cross at the end? Which, if he's a vampire, but unless I just didn't have a good quality. Yeah, Michael's earring. I think it has a cross at the end.
I definitely did see a cross on one of the earrings. I don't know if it was Michael's or not. It might have been one of the other vampires, but I definitely did see that.
Yeah, so are these vampires immune to crosses then?
Well, I mean, I think the cross has to be blessed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So suddenly there is havoc outside and the noise of motorcycles and jeering and lights shining like the gang is doing donuts on the front lawn. Michael throws the front door open and there's nobody there. So he sends Sam to go have a bath. So while Sam is singing in the tub, Michael has a sudden bloodlust attack and he starts going into the bathroom because he can't help himself. And the dog Nanook attacks Michael while Sam is submerged and bites him. And Sam ends up finding bleeding Michael at the bottom of the stairs, sees that Michael has a pale reflection and now realizes that he's a vampire. So I guess the pale reflection is something that shows that he's not fully vampire.
Yeah.
With the whole bite blood drinking theory.
Well, I was actually looking into this because in The Lost Boys, Vampire system. you don't become a full vampire until you kill somebody.
Oh, so
that's
okay.
And like that's Star as well. Like she's also half vampire, which is never really clearly explained, I don't think.
Yeah.
But She's just never fed on.
Well, and
a
same
human.
With Laddie too. Random child in this movie.
Yeah.
So Sam calls the Frog Brothers, and they tell him his brother has to die. Michael is now floating in his room and ends up outside his window. So Mom calls to check in from her date, and Sam is freaking the fuck out because Michael is now floating outside Sam's window. So Mom hightails it out of her date with Max, races home, and in that time, Michael has managed to convince Sam to chill out because they're brothers. When Mom gets home, Michael has left, but Sam covers for him, says he wasn't feeling well, and that he was freaking out on the phone because of a scary comic. But he decides to sleep in his mom's room wearing a bunch of garlic around his neck. And I just love how his mom says, oh, like, are you eating pizza?
Pizza?
was straight grated garlic a topping that you put on your pizza in the 80s?
That's what I was like, what type of pizza is that?
I like garlic. But I can't imagine having a pizza that was garlicky enough that you would mistake it for a necklace of garlic. So Max has gotten home from being ditched on his date, and we get a quick scene of Max getting home and motorcycle sounds, and we are left to assume that Max got, because the pattern so far has shown that everyone who stands up to the gang has disappeared. And so, yeah, we think that Max is dead now. I think it's time for us to take a little break, though, for some show and tell. This is a new thing that we've been doing on this show, where we like to find strange merchandise and things that tie in with this movie. So, Colin, have you found anything for our listeners this week for show and tell?
Yes, I have. So, we've referenced the song Cry Little Sister multiple times, which was written by Gerard McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one of the interesting things that I found was that Gerard McMahon is actually developing a musical prequel to The Lost Boys.
Oh, wow!
Called A Lost Boys Story, and he has recently finished... I think this was as of like March 2020. He had recently finished composing all the music, and they're in the process of casting, but obviously because Broadway is blacked out, the show probably won't go up until 2020. But yeah. I can give you a little snippet of the storyline. So the storyline, it relates to the backstory of David, who immigrates to America from his native Lithuania and is adopted by a loving Jewish family. He eventually winds up in an orphanage run by a vampire, Max, who turns him into one of the undead. He later explains that David then leaves the orphanage as a teenager, runs into others of his own kind, and starts a family with three other vampires. This is where they head to California and the good stuff starts, McMahon says. He added that the musical is very much a story of immortality, but it's also a story about how people in their 20s think they're immortal.
It's kind of like the Voldemort prequel story.
Yeah. And so if anybody's interested and wants to look it up more, there is a YouTube channel called A Lost Boys Story, the musical. They have a bunch of interviews up there with Gerard McMahon, and they also have a couple of the songs, including one that I listened to about half of it, and I was like, it's okay. It kind of works in Cry Little Sister a little bit, but it's called Once Upon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I went to a few of my standbys, and I found a few things here. Over at HollywoodMemorabilia.com, there's a 12x8 Lost Boys poster. Again, not very big. They don't go full-size posters whenever you find something over on Hollywood Memorabilia. But it's signed by Kiefer Sutherland, and it's only $363.99. And also a David Funko Pop figurine. Also signed by Kiefer Sutherland. That one is $249.99. But there is a special code right now that you can use on that site that'll save you $20. Etsy has a minimalist movie poster for $23.19. This is actually something that I think is kind of neat. It basically just features the grandpa quote from the end where he says, "One thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach, all the damn vampires." And it has a little illustrated replica of the open fridge in the bottom corner, including the old fart shelf. And one of my favorite ones, though, that I found... on PropStoreAuction.com, there is an actual movie-worn David's trench coat, and it has harness holes for your flying scenes, and it's expected to go for between 8,000 and 12,000 pounds. Now, the auction closed September 26, 2017, but for some reason, it's still listed on the site, so maybe it never sold. So if you have several thousand extra dollars lying around, maybe it's still available. Maybe you could email them and see if you can get that trench coat with holes in it.
Make a good Christmas present for the lost boy's love in life.
That's right. That's all I've got.
I found one more just as I was looking that I thought was kind of funny. It's on Etsy, and it's a Lost Boys replica Laddie Thompson milk carton horror prop.
Yes, I saw that. Yep.
So yes. If you just want a milk carton with a random child from who plays a bit part in an 80s movie, then it's only £12.99.
Right on. So Michael has gotten to the lair of the gang to find Star and ask her, "What's happening to me, Star?" And we get our third use of the song, "Cry Little Sister." But this time it's used as background music to them fucking. Like, that escalated quickly. He goes there to find out what's wrong with him, and then next thing we know, we get some clouds for some reason, and then he wakes up with her in bed. And that he also sees that his hand has healed, so like his journey to becoming a vampire is well on its way. He goes home, Mom wants to talk, tells him to take off his glasses. This movie really could be like a big old metaphor for drug use, couldn't it? Like, there's so much about this movie where it's just like one big metaphor for someone that's going through drug addiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
After getting nowhere with brooding Michael, she decides to go with Sam over to Max's house to apologize for running out on the date, and she nearly gets eaten by his dog. Sam gets told by the Frog Brothers that the only way to save his brother without killing him is to destroy the head vampire, and all these clues seem to be pointing to Mom's new boyfriend, Max, because he comes into work after the sun is down, his place is guarded by a vicious dog during the day when he'd be most vulnerable, so Max is coming for supper. And so the Frog Brothers decide to come too, and we get badass Michael in his leather jacket and putting candles out with his fingers, just leaving as Max arrive. And I thought this was very clever that they did have this line in here where Max says, "Well, you're the man of the house. I'm not coming in unless you invite me." Now, that's one vampire rule that I do know, is that for the vampire to have any power in the house, he has to be invited in. And so I thought that's very clever that, wait a minute, if Max is still alive, maybe he is the head vampire. I actually forgot, like, the twist at the end. Oh, like, yeah. That's how little experience I actually had with this movie. I forgot that Max is actually the head vampire. But I thought, oh, they're throwing out all these clues that it might be him. So clever, as long as you know your vampire rules. And this movie doesn't necessarily seem to know the vampire rules.
They know the big ones, it seems.
They know the big ones.
Not the subtle nuances.
So during dinner, Sam and the Frogs are trying a whole bunch of different things to expose Max as a vampire, giving him garlic.
That was a great scene.
Oh, that would be so disgusting. If you're, like, I love garlic, but if you're expecting Parmesan cheese and you put a big old spoonful on top of your spaghetti, that would be a harsh awakening as soon as you bite into that big mouthful of garlic, like freshly grated garlic. But yeah, they spill the holy water on him. And then, yeah, this is the one that I really like, where they turn off the lights to see if he glows. I didn't know that was a vampire thing. But then they turn the lights back on. They've got the mirror right in front of his face to see if there's a reflection.
I was going to say the glowing thing would be true if he was a Twilight vampire, but they only sparkle in the sun.
They only sparkle. So the verdict is that he's not a vampire. Max gives Lucy a little parenting advice, something every parent loves receiving from someone they barely know. But he decides that the third time's a charm. Tomorrow, my place, I'll cook for you, Lucy. And so now we get back to what Michael is doing. And he and the gang are checking out a beach bonfire with Walk This Way by Run DMC playing. The rest of the gang, instead of telling Michael what he is, they decide to show him. So they all get their vampire faces on, and we get a surprisingly tame bloodbath. A lot of shaky cameras zooming in, and people screaming. And it's not until David actually, like, bites into someone's skull that we get, like, our first real blood. And then we see, like, a bloody neck at one point with holes in it.
I was going to say, one thing I do kind of appreciate about this film is that, what's the word I'm looking for? The amateurish nature in which it was created. Like, this film was made in only 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell they saved, like, most of their budget for the final fight scene.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time you actually ever see anybody fly.
Yeah.
Every other scene before that is just that overhead, like, shaky cam swooping that's, like, filmed backwards and then played forwards.
It's almost like Joel Schumacher watched The Evil Dead and went, you can use a shaky camera from a point of view instead of having to worry about budget.
It's just interesting because I felt like they did a really good job, whereas today it's like it's one of those situations where today movies rely so much on like CGI and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I really, going into it, you know, like some 80s movies, the CGI or like the design of, like that, like the special effects can be pretty cliche or you can really, really tell. But for The Lost Boys, I found it to be really well put together. It surprised me actually, especially in all the fight scenes. Yeah. And I thought that the director really, like the cinematography and everything with the camera and the different perspectives really worked well for the audience. I think.
Yeah, see, I agree. Just with something like this though, like the fact that they've had such a buildup of mystery.
Yes.
To what these guys, I felt like once you actually see what they are, it's a little bit of a letdown because, you know, you've had scenes before where you get the guard being swooped down on trying to get in his car. You get the roof ripped off and people getting pulled into nowhere. And you don't get to see your villain. And then finally, when you get to see your villain,
I agree with that.
It's not as intense as you. It's not as much of a massacre.
Yeah.
I thought the look. I love the look of them. And the whole time I watched this movie, I was just marveling at how much the Buffy the Vampire Slayer series stole from it.
Yeah.
Like, so much of even the tone of it, the way the vampires look, is clearly influenced by the Lost Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked the way the vampires looked, but I do agree, a lot of the fights, even though they saved all their money for that, they were really anticlimactic. Like, they ended really quick.
Yes.
They weren't as gory as you, like, kind of would think that... a vampire
slaughter
would be.
Yeah, there was more of an opportunity for to build some sort of tension in this movie that it doesn't quite build at the right pace.
Yeah.
So Michael, who has been watching from the sides, he resists the bloodlust so intensely, he falls out of the tree. David tells him, now you know what you are. You don't grow old. You can't die. But you must feed. But
that would have been the perfect time for him to just state the tagline, like, party all night, sleep all day, never die.
So Michael is back at home, and Star finds him. Sam finds out that she's a vampire too. She was supposed to kill Michael that night on the boardwalk. That was supposed to be her initiation night, and she fell in love with him or something instantly. Sure.
All that long eye contact.
All that all that coy, all that coy through the crowd at the concert staring. So the Frog Bros come to the rescue. They come up with a plan to infiltrate the vampire lair with Michael's help and kill them all during the day because that's when they're most vulnerable. They steal Grandpa's car and they go to the lair. As they walk through, Sam is freaking out about like every little bit of dirt that touches him. Like he's like going through seizures as he's walking behind the Frog Bros. Did you notice that at all? He gets like, yeah. He gets like a plant, some sort of brush lands on his shoulder and he's twitching and freaking out. And like the whole time into the vampire's actual lair. Yeah. Every little bit of dirt he touches, Sam can't handle it. He doesn't seem like the right person to bring with you on this mission.
No.
So Michael is getting Star and Laddie out. I never did introduce Laddie earlier, played by Chance Michael Corbett, who has 20 credits, but this is his debut. So he's getting them out of there. Sam and the frogs have found the vampires. They're hanging upside down in the rafters, and they need to kill the head vampire, David. And they guess wrong about which one is the head vampire. And they kill Marco with a stake to the heart. He dies spectacularly. All of the vampires wake up pissed off. Something, and this scene was actually like legitimately scary, I felt, compared to some of the other stuff. When the vampires, they wake up, they're screaming. They've all got their vampire faces on. And like you said, it's pretty good makeup for the vampires, like the look of the vampires, and they're chasing after them. But then they catch up to Sam in one of the tunnels, and this vampire with supernatural strength grabs him by the ankle and can't pull back like a 100-pound 13-year-old.
Well, he's tired. He just woke up, man. Give the guy some time.
He hasn't had his coffee yet.
Had his blood coffee yet. his caffeinated human.
But yeah, when he catches up to when he catches up to Sam, he eventually ends up going too far and gets burnt because of the sunbeams that are coming into the tunnel.
You know what I thought was an actual, like, I don't know if this is just Kiefer Sutherland's amazing acting ability, but I thought it was a nice touch to have the tear. Like, yeah. When he pulls back and he's burning, like, to have the tear of his like lost friend, I thought was just an amazing choice.
that extreme close up.
The single tear. When everyone gets to the surface, we see why the vampires in Twilight are glittery. Because all the boys that got soaked in vampire juice are now glittery. Did you notice how glittery that blood was?
I was like, was that just me? Or like, did they have something sparkly before? And I'm like, oh, okay.
It's the blood. And when I read a bit more about it, they actually said that they did mix glitter in with the blood. And I thought, oh my God, that's where glittery vampires come from. Lost Boys did it first.
There you go.
So they take Star and Laddie home, and I love Grandpa's reaction to the fact that they are carrying a couple of unconscious bodies. They're carrying these bodies up the stairs, and all Grandpa says is, the rule is when you take the car out, you put gas in the car. Like, he's not even fazed by the fact that they're carrying around.
He's also just like, well, now you know.
Now he
goes on his way.
So the kids move on to their plan B, and we get another priceless scene where they go to the church during a baptism to fill their canteens with holy water. this is where, like, the tone of the movie has, like, I don't know whether it's to balance out the really scary scene of the vampires waking up, but we've now had these two very funny moments back to back.
That was something that I struggled with throughout the movie, of not knowing There was even one point my wife was watching with me, and I was like, I didn't know that this movie was supposed to be so funny.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's not funny, isn't it scary? I was like, I don't know. It seems like a comedy to me for the most part.
Yeah. And
yeah, I would agree. It wasn't like so much horror to me.
Yeah.
But I thought it wasn't going to be as comedic as it was.
Well, and I know when I reached out to you, it was before I had watched it again. And so, I mean, I even asked Marin, I said, well, okay, I just want to make sure that you're okay with horror movies. and then once I actually start watching, I go, oh, well, there's like one scene of horror.
Like I was expecting a more, I've only ever seen that like movie cover. And for whatever reason, in all this time of thinking about The Lost Boys, I thought it was more like Interview with a Vampire, mm-hmm. like more dramatic, serious in tone,
yeah.
scary in tone. But yeah, I would classify this movie almost like comedy first.
Oh yeah, because you get into the Frog Brothers and all of a sudden, well, okay, they're the heroes, but they're clearly over the top.
Yeah.
Rambo type characters,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
They're obviously played for comedy. You can't take the Frog Brothers seriously. Yeah. And I imagine that I haven't ever seen the Lost Boys sequels, but I imagine the fact that they appear in the sequels, the camp of them must be just raised a notch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they go to the church and they steal holy water, and they go back home and they make a garlic holy water soup in the bathtub and fill up their water pistols with it. Them getting ready for the inevitable vampire attack reminds me a little bit of Kevin McAllister.
I know, I was going to say,
they make their holy water soup and then they set up the micro machines so that they'll slip on them and heat up a doorknob. I just felt like those were coming. So they fill up their water pistols with this concoction that they've made in the bathtub, their bathtub gin. They're all camoed up with face paint and everything. Edgar gives a pep talk saying that no two vampire deaths are the same. And then Nanook starts freaking out in the front yard. The bad guys are coming. And in a tense moment of Sam and Michael being stuck outside trying to get Nanook to come inside, they manage to get back inside, but it really doesn't stop the vampires for long. Inside is not the safe place to be. And there's one of the vampires, something explodes. Does he come out of the chimney?
Yeah, so I didn't understand.
I rewound that yeah. little 10-second clip. I rewound it like 15 times. And I still can't tell if he came through a wall, if he came through the door, if he came out the fireplace. He just suddenly explodes onto the scene. And then you don't, like, see any holes in the wall or anything. Like, I have no idea where this guy came from. It just, it confused me. Yeah, so they can get in, no problem. Doesn't matter whether you're inside or not, I guess. And I guess now you don't have to invite them in to have their powers if they come through the wall or wherever they came through.
Touché, yeah. they did drop that aspect.
They came into the house, they weren't invited, but he didn't come over the threshold of the door. Is it something to do with the threshold? I need to go look up my vampire rules. So the first to die out of the vampires is Paul, who gets first splashed with the holy water from the tub and then knocked into the tub by Nanook, and he gloriously and violently melts. Next to die, we've got Dwayne, who gets shot by Sam with a bow and arrow, but he keeps coming. He gets shot again and ends up electrocuted by the stereo, to which Sam says, "Death by stereo, huh?" Like, is this a play on something is this a reference to something that I don't understand? Maybe I'm not up on my 80s music, you know.
I have no idea.
Because Video killed the radio star, but I don't remember any lyrics in an 80s song that would say death by stereo. I just don't understand why this is a clever line. But then Michael ends up calling him Sambo, so that one makes up for it. We've got a clever pun going on to give Sam a new name. But yeah, I just don't understand the death by stereo. And he says it so dramatically. Corey Haim delivers that line with all the passion. So finally, we get David versus Michael. And we get the aerobic wire work fighting.
until finally David gets impaled on some of the antlers in Grandpa's death room. Mm-hmm. So many antlers in that room. And we get Cry Little Sister playing again for the fourth time as David dies impaled on these antlers. But nothing has changed for some reason. Michael's still a vampire. Uh-oh, David wasn't the leader. Bum, bum, bum. Twist! Mom and Max have come home, and oh shit, Max is the head vampire.
Knew it.
Yeah, Max was after recruiting the family as his own blood-sucking Brady Bunch. But just, and I will say that the vampire makeup, the look, like you said, of the vampires works very well, except for on Max.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, too.
It does not work well on Max. I mean, they could have had more fun with the fact that he's a head vampire and done something different. But, yeah, the regular prosthetics that they put on the rest of the vampires that worked so well on the young guys in the movie, it does not work on Edward Herrmann. So we get we hear the La Cucaracha horn of Grandpa's truck, and he comes to the rescue, crashing through the front of the house and letting the unbelievably sharp fence post impale Max. I like when we see Grandpa earlier when he's putting these fence posts in, the point actually goes up in how he's installing the fence post. I don't understand why he's making this really sharp fence. But it impales Max, and Max is toast, and the curse is broken because Max was, in fact, the head vampire. So Grandpa goes to the fridge, and he grabs a root beer, and he has the line that if there's one thing he hates in this town, it's all the damn vampires. And I was expecting the credits song to be Cry Little Sister, but we get a reprise of People Are Strange instead, and we get credits. And there is the Lost Boys.
I like it when movies just end really, really abruptly like that.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Well, and it's like, and it all culminates in this final scene where we get like four separate deaths and just, you know, like they just keep throwing it bigger and bigger at you. But The Lost Boys, on IMDb, it has scored a 7.3 out of 10 from the audience, and it has the Metascore from the critics of 63. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 85% from the audience. From the critics, the tomato meter, it has a rating of 76%. But those are just numbers. What did people have to say about the movie, Colin?
All right, so our first review comes from Google audience member Shelby Leeworthy. She says, "Best film of all time. Incredible fashion, outstanding acting, amazing directing, and incredible script. Best soundtrack of all time. It's a classic 80s horror and vampire film that was incredibly funny and still iconic to this day. As a young girl who has grown up in the new generation, I believe it's totally underrated and definitely not spoken about enough. Everyone, no matter who you are, should watch this movie. This film has no flaws. This movie will remain legendary forever."
I think I found a couple. No flaws.
Empire Magazine reviewer William Thomas says, "The Lost Boys remains a supremely watchable example of something the 80s did right." And then My last one I have here is from the Los Angeles Times reviewer Michael Wilmington, who says, "There's always room for a fancy trash, and this movie about a gang of punk vampires terrorizing new kids in town seems capable of providing some. Then the characters open their mouths." And those are our reviewers for this
year. Right on. Yeah, so we've got kind of, except for the Metascore, which is always seems to be low from IMDb, we've kind of got floating around 75 to 85% from where people think. Maren, it's your first time watching The Lost Boys. Where do you sit with The Lost Boys? What was your first experience like?
Well, I think it was pretty good. I would say my ratings would be around like 65 to like 80, 75. It was a good classic, I think. I wasn't alive in the 80s, but I've read that the Lost Boys stood out from the other movies that were coming out around that time, like Pretty in Pink, A lot of different movies throughout that time were coming out. 16 Candles, you know, like the classic teen movies. And then, bam, The Lost Boys comes out with this, like, extreme violent, not violent, but, like, gory type of thing. Yeah. And I think I really enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, there's different flaws in it and things like that. But it's definitely, like, one of those, like, teen flick movies that, like, girls would have the actors up on their walls, like the poster.
Yeah, not Rob Lowe. But one thing I did find kind of interesting too is when I was reading about this, Richard Donner was originally going to direct this movie, but he ended up moving on, and he's on as a producer, but he moved on and decided to direct Lethal Weapon instead. Mm-hmm. And there is a scene in Lethal Weapon where on one of the movie marquees that they walk past, you see The Lost Boys, the sleeper hit of the summer. And so it was something that he threw into that movie. Neither movie had been released, but he decided to put in this marquee that said that The Lost Boys was a big hit into his other movie. So it would have been interesting, like, if this had failed.
It's the secret. Mm-hmm. That manifests.
So, Colin, did it live up to your mom's VHS box for you?
I mean, I should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but I am a vampire fanatic. So, like, I love... Vampires are my monster of choice for sure. Like, I've watched all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, loved Angel. I've watched any vampire movie I've got my hands on except this one.
And Twilight.
And sadly, I have watched Twilight. Yeah,
I've seen the first one. I mean, I haven't gone past
my vampire love goes so deep that I've also watched like 8 seasons of Vampire Diaries and its spinoff. So I love vampires, and actually this movie I thought was great. Like I said, I really liked the way it was shot, even though it seems kind of amateurish at times. I love just how simple it was in mm-hmm. its story. It's just very 80s. But I like the vampires in it. I thought the story was fun. Especially once I got on board with the idea of it being a comedy, I even liked it even more.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that a sequel wasn't made sooner. Like, the Tribe came out in 2008.
Yeah, they waited like 20 years for a sequel.
You can tell that people were like really... thirsty. I'm going to use that. Yeah. Thirsty for a sequel, because the Tribe was... direct to DVD, and it still made $3.5 million.
Jeez.
Or something like that. The thirst, I mean, the luster had worn off by then. It only made $900,000, but you could tell that people wanted a sequel so bad that it's a shame that they waited so long. Corey Haim was already like ruined by drugs, like mm-hmm. you know, Kiefer Sutherland had already gone on to like bigger and better things.
Yeah, 24, which would be like arguably one of the biggest things he's ever done.
And there was a plans to make a sequel. There was two different ones I read. One was they're gonna do like The Lost Girls and do kind of a similar thing with like a female lead, which I think would have been really cool. And then the other one was actually going to be to bring David back, because like you said, when he gets impaled on the antlers, he doesn't explode or like mm-hmm. anything. And so there's some ambiguity around whether the fact he's actually dead. So I thought that would have been really cool. Yeah, I would give this movie, for what it is, I would say it's around like the 75-80 mark for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that I didn't have a lot of experience with this movie when I was a kid. Like, this is one that I feel like I probably only saw once or twice ever. And like I said, it was kind of a stepping stone into scarier, gorier horror for me. This movie, I'm now looking at it from like the filmmaker perspective, where there is some messy filmmaking with this. Like, it's lopsided, builds in a really weird way, but I still really enjoyed the nostalgia, and it really is a snapshot of the 80s, especially when you look at the fashion. It is funny seeing
even that opening montage where they're going all around the town showing all the different people, and you look at half those people and go, well, they just blend in normally now. Mm-hmm. But in this one town, it was all these people that had mohawks, and it was all these people wearing, you know, funky clothes.
Yeah, I love that opening scene on the carousel. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something like so sexy about that. I was like, that's vampires right there.
I gotta say, like, talking about the fashion and everything, I love Star's hair. I was like, the whole movie, I was like, I wish I had hair like that, because I got a perm a couple of years ago, because I love the 80s hair, and then it ruined my hair, so I cut it off, but I'm just looking at Star, and I'm like, I wish. It's so nice and curly, and...
Yeah. And it's even a style that, like, it's not an outdated style. Like it's not too big for the 80s. And it's it's actually a hairdo that would still work, unlike all the vampires' hairdo.
I was going to say, it was probably to my benefit that my mom didn't let me watch this movie when I was in, like, high school, because I would have for sure wanted to dress like Kiefer Sutherland.
Well, and that is true. Like, they definitely are cool vampires. Like, you know, there is a definite swagger to them. I kind of wish that we could have seen them being more menacing. Or
I was going to say, I wanted more of the vampires. Mm-hmm. I wanted more of that group and seeing them interact. Like, Alex Winter probably says, like, he probably says two sentences the entire movie.
Yeah.
And Kiefer Sutherland, he's a main character. He maybe speaks 8 times, max.
And most of those are saying the name Michael.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times Michael is said in this film?
Oh, I read it somewhere. It's like 130.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like 118 times. I'm like,
And that's because it's like, as they're on the motorcycle, it's Michael. Try Michael. To keep up, Michael. Yeah, every time David talks to him, he makes sure that he says his name. I think I can get behind like a 70-ish. I can see why it was a scary movie to me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of fun to think about. We've watched The Goonies, and then we watched Short Circuit, which is set in the same town. So we've got this connection with Short Circuit, where it's kind of like, oh, imagine The Goonies if they were dealing with technology instead of pirates. And now I can kind of watch this and go, well, it's kind of like The Goonies, but imagine if they were vampire hunters instead. You know, like, Corey Feldman's character is very much like what Mouth probably was in a couple of years in The Goonies.
Kid Rambo.
Well, that's The Lost Boys, and that's our show for this week. Big thank you to our guest this week, Maren Richardson.
Thank you
for being part of our first Halloween episode.
I love it. It's so exciting.
Thanks as well for being our first female guest on the show.
Wow, thanks.
Yeah. if people want to find you out there online, where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I have a music page on there, Maren Richardson Music. So you can find me there.
What kind of stuff do you have on your music page?
Singing? Yes, I am singing. I am studying currently in classical music. So you'll find me singing some opera arias on there.
Yes, go listen to her sing, because she is fantastic.
Oh my goodness.
That's how Colin and I that's how Colin and I know her, is we've been in a musical with her, so we know she can sing.
Nothing short of angelic.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, guys.
So thank you, Maren, for coming. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is go over to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. Give us 5 stars. It doesn't matter what you say, but it's those 5 stars that drive us up the chart. You can give us a review that says, you know, sparkly vampires are bullshit. No, sorry, I don't think you can swear on there. But you can put in anything you want. And that's the point, is it's not for our egos, it's just to help us get noticed on the charts.
If you want to contact us, shoot us an email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com, all one word. Also check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com, and all our social medias. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. That's where you can find what movies we're watching, so that you can watch them as well, and then come hear what we have to say.
Also, we now have a Patreon page. If you want to donate to us and make us sound better, help us build a in-home studio, you can do that. Go over to www.patreon.com/I used to like this one, and you can be part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at one more spooky movie on I Used to Like This One.
Wow, guys, thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Thanks for coming, Marin.